welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Good weekend, guys.
Absolutely. Good morning. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. A lot of football taken in this weekend.
A lot of football.
We have a big Monday show for you. The Cowboys might be better than we thought. It looks like the Warriors will never lose another NBA championship, and the Browns have the receiver. Although it might not be exactly who you think it is. That's where we start this morning. Not with a Dez Bryant signing, but with all-pro wide receiver Josh Gordon returning to the Cleveland Browns after working on his mental and his physical health. Browns head coach Hugh Jackson is hopeful that Gordon could be on the field as early as week one when the Cleveland Browns take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. Gordon still has to pass additional steps in the league's substance abuse program before he sees any action. Chris Carter, what do you make of Josh Gordon's return to the Browns?
Well, first, I'm very excited. Every day that he was gone from camp, I had concern over what his, not only his mental and his physical health, but also what his football future. I mean, he's to the point where any little slip up could finish his football career. So I knew it was a critical situation for him. I like the fact that he did reach out to the team and to the NFL to say he did need some help. I'm still concerned about that, but I do feel better that he is back with the team. We talked about maybe a little over a week ago, and Nick, I think you asked me the question, at this point in their career, Josh Gordon and Dez Bryant, who would you prefer to have? And I would prefer to have Josh Gordon because of the fact of his ability to be able to run. And then now since they have Jarvis Landry brought him over and he's more of the possession receiver, I definitely need someone like Josh Gordon. So I'm excited that the Browns have not given up on him. I'm excited that the NFL, that they might have intervened to be able to get some clarity on this case, because this is not the normal, a person inside the drug program taking away time before they go to training camp. I haven't seen this Josh scenario
because it had happened before, and that's something the NFL deserves credit for on this front, because the NFL, in my opinion, in years past had been far too black and white and far too authoritarian at times when it comes to street drug violations. Listen, you have this many failed tests, you miss four games, this many failed tests, you miss the season, and indefinitely suspended. And I don't want to sit here, I'm not saying Josh failed a test, but once you are at this point in the substance abuse program, any misstep, a missed test, not only a failed test, a lot of things can get it to where, okay, we'll talk to you in a year. And I think the NFL quietly, because they haven't publicly said this, but the only logical conclusion you can draw from all the evidence we have is the Browns, Josh, and the NFL came together in order to give Josh the best chance to get back on a football field. And it looks like now he's going to be back on a football field without being suspended again, which is critical because, as C mentioned, I mean, he hadn't played a full season since 2013. In 2014, he was injured, and he played part of the season, out 15 and 16, only played a half dozen games last year. If he then had another year suspension, his football career is over. So on the personal standpoint, on the human standpoint, I'm happy for Josh Gordon. On the football standpoint, you now look at the Browns, just at the wide receiving core for a moment, and it's the basketball team you're always talking about. Njoku can be their center as the big tight end. Josh Gordon, people don't, I don't know if they know this, he's 6'3". He can be their, he's fast, but he's also a big guy. He can be their power forward. You mentioned Jarvis Landry is their possession guy. And then Antonio Callaway is an interesting slot option, kind of as a point guard to continue the analogy. Like, you look at the Browns pass catchers, and every box is checked without having to add Dez Bryant, assuming that Josh Gordon continued, now that he's back, that he stays there.
Josh Gordon missed a lot of time. So for people that haven't been following closely to where he was when he first came out and how he played, how good can Josh Gordon be? Because you answered very quickly that he's a better option for the Browns than Dez Bryant. Tell people why.
Yeah, I still think he's a 1,000-yard receiver. He still has very unique size-speed combination. We've seen in the highlight of his the highlight season was 2013 season. He does stuff like that we hadn't seen a big guy do since Randy Moss. Now, he's bigger than Randy Moss from a size bulk standpoint, not necessarily as fast on the deep ball, but his route combination, his ability to be able to make the big play. I mean, he runs beautiful routes, catches the ball with his hands. I mean, he has, I would say, I haven't seen 10 wide receivers in the last 20 years have more talent than Josh Gordon. Not 10.
No. Wow.
Not 10.
He had a stretch in 2013 where in a month, in four games of football, with keep in mind who's playing quarterback for the Browns, well, yes, at any point in the last 30 years. But in four games, he had 770 receiving yards. In four games. Like, I mean, he had, I think in that stretch, I think he had five touchdowns. That's the only reason that the Browns or any team would have been this patient. Like, every player that gets kicked out of the league wants to be reinstated, but even if they get reinstated, there's not usually many teams that are like, okay, you haven't played in 2 years. Like, we don't know if you're going to be able to stay clean. But his talent, he hadn't played a football game in a couple years, and last year's first game back, he had 85 yards. 85 yards receiving again. Who was playing quarterback for the Browns? It's like DeShone Kizer, Cody Kessler, and company. The talent's undeniable.
Yeah, and I could see the Browns winning six games this year. Because if you look at, you talk about the basketball team as far as the wide receiver and their tight end. Let's include their quarterbacks. Tyrod, since we found out from last week, that's his name compared to Tyrod, which we've all been calling him. Baker Mayfield, and then the running backs. They got Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde. I mean, Carlos Hyde is an underrated player. Their offensive line, I'm going to stay with the same thing. Their offensive line is underrated. Their defense, I believe, is going to be pretty good. It's underrated. So I believe the Browns have improved as much as any team. Well, they've won one game in the last 2 years. But from a skilled standpoint, that's why I believe also that Tyrod will be the quarterback. Because when you have that many skilled guys, it's important to be able to get these guys the football. And that's why I believe he'll be able to hold off Baker because of the playmakers on the outside. Browns and Browns fans, they should be excited. Because this morning, they woke up and they are a better football team that Josh is back with the club.
And you can go, I'll go a step further on each position group. You mentioned Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson. There's the guy they drafted at the top of the second round, Nick Chubb. They have three, I believe, quality running backs. David Njoku is a guy who's had a problem with drops, but we saw how talented he was in college. There's a reason he was a first-round pick. And I already mentioned the wide receivers, but how much better is everyone on the team going to look when you go from the worst quarterback situation in the NFL to Tyrod Taylor, who, as maligned as he was in Buffalo, there aren't 20 people alive that play the position better than him. There might not be 15. So we have talked about what a terrible position bad or inexperienced or inaccurate quarterbacks put you in. How much better are these guys going to be when they know the quarterback more likely than not is going to put the ball where it needs to be, as opposed to DeShone Kizer, who wasn't ready, or whomever else they were running out there last year? Like, I might have more questions about the defense than Chris does, but offensively, you look at the Browns and say, very good wide receiving group, quality running back room, high potential tight end, and stability at quarterback, at least until they go to the rookie Baker Mayfield.
No, there's a lot of potential, but I do want to sort of close out the segment where we started with Josh Gordon. Does it concern you at all that during the preseason he had to take some time away to get himself back going again? That was during the preseason before the pressures and all of it and the limelight and everything kind of falls upon him here with the regular season right out of the corner, especially if Hugh Jackson is saying there's a chance he could start week one.
No, I expect him to be out there week number one, but all the guys that are in the drug program, I got a great deal of concern for. There's a reason why they've been there. And now he's decided to take some time off, even if it wasn't to deal with the substance or drinking, which I do believe it had to do with one or either of those. I don't believe it was just anxiety. I believe it was something involved, not necessarily what he's been involved of in the past, but I believe.
You could listen. They don't test you. It's not like you're on probation with the law where they test you for alcohol as they do for some. The NFL drug program, they're not testing you for. You don't violate if you've been drinking typically, but a lot of guys, if they drink, that is the next step to using drugs. And so that's, I'm not reporting this, but my my educated guess would be that he saw himself where the team saw himself
going down a path and said,
whoa. And by the way, good for him.
Sure.
Like, good for him, good for them, because that's the types of things these guys, that people need support on. But then there was also a report this week that he's got a child support court case hanging over his head where, I am not justifying anybody not taking care of their kids at all. Not unpaid child support's a huge problem in this country. We do have an odd situation with pro football players because you look at their annual salary and he doesn't start getting paid till September. And I don't know that the court system, they decree this in June, and it sounds like his representation says, well, you're basing it off his $800,000 salary. He doesn't get a dollar of that until September. But so he has a lot of stresses and pressures on him right now. So I think it'd be very warranted to continue to be concerned. But as long as he's out there, you said one of the, as far as skill set, I think he instantly is one of the 10 best receivers in the league. Like, every time I've seen him play football, he's been that. The question is, can he play football? Can he stay on the field?
Absolutely. Exactly, for the Cleveland Browns. We'll talk about this a lot more. Eric Mangini will be with us to discuss. But coming up, hey, why might Dak Prescott not have to be lights out for the Cowboys to win the NFC East this year? The answer, when First Things First rolls on. On to the Cowboys and Bengals, but really just Cowboys. Cowboys offense, Dak Prescott, 10 for 15, 86 yards and a touchdown in his three possessions Saturday. Cowboys defense, shut out Cincinnati in the first half. The only dose of bad news, though, all-pro guard Zach Martin had to leave the game with a knee injury, but according to reports, he avoided significant damage, which is great to hear. Back to the defense, though. CeCe, how good does Dallas need their defense to be if they're going to compete this season?
Let's put a number on it. I think in the top 10. And also, in doing that, I think if they can be in the top 10, they can be in the top 10 as far as turnovers. I believe that will help that offense. They're going to be able to run the football. And that we know because all the resource they spent on that offensive line. But I believe their defense is underrated. They've done a tremendous job as far as the draft. Very, very athletic. Have the ability to be able to get after the quarterback. They're going to be getting David Irvin back after a four-game suspension. So they have at least four quality pass rushers. I believe that their linebacking core, especially Jalen Smith, I believe he's a really special player playing next to Sean Lee. And their secondary with younger players, I believe, is an underrated secondary. So I believe they're going to have a good defense. I was shocked about their defense last year. And I believe they're going to be able to build on that, especially with the running game. And that defense is probably only going to have to play 8.5 minutes a game.
All right, so a bunch of stuff to build off there. One is Jalen Smith. If you're like, where do I know that name? He was going to be a top five pick. And do you know how good you have to be not a pass rusher necessarily, but an inside linebacker and to be a top five pick? That's what his profile was when he took the field in his final college football game, the Fiesta Bowl, I believe it was, for Notre Dame. He suffered a devastating injury that led to drop foot,
yes,
which is still a situation I don't totally understand, but I know it was enough to where he fell from being a top five pick to a second round pick. Man, if you watched him this weekend, he looked fast again.
Yeah, last year he played with a brace inside of his shoe that we hadn't seen a skilled player play with. We've seen some bigger players play with in the NFL. So his comeback was a tremendous story. Now he's removed the brace because he almost has 100% feeling in that knee and the foot, and you could see the elite speed and the reason why he was coveted coming out of college.
So you've got he and Sean Lee in your linebacking core. I'm going to mention another guy, Taco Charlton, a guy they drafted in the first round last year that they expect more from this year. We know they franchise-tagged DeMarcus Lawrence coming off a 14-sack season.
Yes.
David Irving, who, like you said, is going to miss a month. He had a 7 sacks last year. Tyrone Crawford had, I think, around half a dozen sacks last year, another defensive end. All of a sudden, you see their front seven, you say, all right, so as long as Sean Lee's healthy, that could be a really good front seven. And even when Sean Lee's not there, they could have enough people. C mentions the secondary. Everybody, I think, saw the unbelievable interception Chidobe Awuzie made this weekend. But I think they did something interesting. We sometimes hear about guys who aren't great athletes transitioning from corner to safety. The Cowboys did something the opposite with, I think, former first-round pick Byron Jones, or at least top two-round pick Byron Jones. He was a safety. They're now transitioning him to corner.
Yes.
Because he, one of the reasons they can do that is he's such a great athlete. If you know his name, it's because he set, like, the world record, essentially, for the broad jump at the combine. So you look at their defense, and you say, okay, that's a lot of homegrown talent. It's a lot of high draft picks. There are also guys on there like David Irving and Jalen Smith who, for different reasons, Irving drug-related. Randy Gregory's another one, by the way,
yes,
who drug-related where fell in the draft. Jalen, injury-related, fell in the draft, but they were highly ranked prospects if you remove the off-the-field either drug or injury issues. And you say there's a lot of talent on that defense, too.
Is the defense good enough, though, that maybe you don't have to concern yourself so much with the one thing that we've been talking about the last couple weeks, which is the lack of a receiving core that this team has? I mean, can that defense drive you that, plus maybe Dak and Zeke?
Well, this is the thing we've seen in even NFL history and recent NFL history, is that if you have a good defense, you don't necessarily need a shower all the time, Jenna. You can, it's a little deodorant.
You'll get there, okay.
It's a deodorant, okay, that because they eat up so much time. All right, if they can create turnovers, they can get those extra possessions for the offense. So we have seen great defensive teams before, that being Seattle before Doug Baldwin and all those guys emerged. They got upset with me because I didn't think that they
pedestrian.
Were. Yeah, so, but in the process, they weren't a great wide receiving core. But the defense, the running game, Russell Wilson held everything together. Baltimore, for years, they didn't have a whole bunch of explosive players on the offensive end because they've been dominated by defense. So defensive-oriented teams, they can do stuff like that. They don't have to be as explosive. Look at New England, how they originally built their resume at the beginning of Tom Brady. Good defense, run the ball, don't turn the ball over. That's a recipe typically for winning a good 10 games. So if you say, okay, my receiving core is not going to be great, what else do I need? I wouldn't say a running game. I would say a great defense.
And I don't think, C believes, that this defense is going to be that Ravens defense or this even the Seahawks defense. That's to the extreme. But that Ravens team and that Seahawks team didn't have Zeke, and they didn't have this offensive line.
Right.
Like, this is one of the reasons why I think, and I understand why we have focused so much on the Cowboys receivers, because it's a big year for Dak. They used to have Dez. They used to have Witten. It's a big change. But when we're just going, like, group by group on the Cowboys, overall defense, this was has either been a top 10 scoring or yardage defense each of the last 2 years. Like you said, it was surprisingly good last year. Overall defense, they feel to me like a B+. Running game, they're an A+. Offensive line, they're an A+. So the only part of the team that, to me, is a concern is the passing game. Now, that's an enormous part of the game in today's NFL, but that is something that you're unable to overcome if you've got a bad defense. You're unable to overcome it if you also don't have a running game. They check all the boxes except for that one.
And one thing that they do have, and they get a lot like the L.A. Rams get with Wade Phillips, they get tremendous experience with Rod Marinelli and his ability to deal with a lot of different personalities. Because you talk about all those things, suspensions, different guys being in there. Rod Marinelli, man, he can coach up some football, and they like those projects. Rod Marinelli, and you got to give Jerry Jones credit because he doesn't give up on people. Jalen Smith spent that high draft pick on him, and all those guys.
Randy Gregory missed a year.
They wouldn't be on the field without Jerry Jones. And I personally know that, how involved Jerry is in their day-to-day lives.
All right, we got to take a break there. Coming up, which Panther is taking a lot of pressure off of Cam Newton? And then some first things first. Because you know I'll never get there. Time for some stories to start your morning. The league is handing out 15-yard penalties this season to players for lowering their head and making contact with opponents. It's called the new helmet rule. Some of the calls made on the field left players and fans confused. All right, Cece, what is your reaction to the new rule, how it's being implemented, and maybe what is the new rule?
My reaction, Jenna, is I don't like it, but this is what. I love football more than I hate this. And if I want to keep watching football, I'm going to have to adjust, because this is the way we have to try to train football players to remove their head from the collisions. I know it's hard on the referees. I know it's hard to watch. I was upset this weekend. But if I want this game to stay as popular as it is, I'd better get used to guys tackling without their head being involved, Nick.
Here's the reason that I'm not yet going to overreact to this. I think much – do you remember the year they changed the illegal contact rules in reaction to Seattle just mugging everybody?
Yes.
That preseason, that was called seemingly every 15 minutes. Illegal contact, illegal contact.
Yes.
And then in the regular season, they pared it back down. I've got to think in the preseason, they are calling this to the extreme, and we won't see it nearly as much in the regular season. But I do know for fans that don't watch the preseason, that just check in, to come back during the regular season, they're going to be like, wait, that hit right there is a foul on the defense? It's going to be confusing.
All right, moving on. Adrian Peterson isn't ready to hang up his cleats just yet. The 7-time Pro Bowler is meeting with Washington today in hopes of extending his career to a 12th season. Peterson had just 529 yards on less than 3.5 yards per carry last season with the Saints and Cardinals. CC, can AP still contribute in the NFL?
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult because his running style, first and second down runner, you know that you're not going to throw him the ball out of the backfield. We only see a few runners like this that are limited. Leonard Fournette, he's a guy in Jacksonville right now. Adrian's had a great career. But as we saw last year, you asked me this question last year. I was like, yeah, Jenna, he's got football left. Uh-huh. And Nick looked right at me and said, no.
And then James Harrison
so you guys, said so you guys made me look bad because making Nick look like he's smarter than me on the football. So I'm with Nick right on this one.
Yeah, listen, the only reason you would bring Adrian Peterson in, aside from the fact that it's a Daniel Snyder type of thing, like, oh, a guy who used to be great, we'd love to have him in Washington, is if you remember what Alvin Kamara told us about Peterson being a good, believe it or not, mentor in the locker room for the younger running backs. If you want him in that regard, and I know they lost Darius Geis, so you feel like there's a need, but
yeah.
I mean, I think if he plays, I'd set the over-under total rushing yards from like 200. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer to me, but he doesn't have anything left at this point, I think it's fair to say.
All right, finally, some bad news for Tom Brady and the Patriots. Rookie offensive lineman Isaiah Wynn will miss the entire season with a torn Achilles. The first-round pick out of Georgia was supposed to help fill the void left by left tackle Nate Solder's departure. Best laid plans. CC, how big of a blow is this to Brady and the Pats?
Man, this is a huge blow because not only is he going to be a very good player, but you're talking about need. When you go through free agency, because that's before the draft, they know they're going to lose Nate Solder. Okay, no problem. We don't plan on paying the type of price that the Giants and other teams were willing to do. We're going to utilize the draft to be able to replace him. Now he's gone. And all those other players in free agency, I mean, Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, he's going to earn his money this year.
Yeah.
Because they don't have the overall versatility. Like, this is going to hurt their passing game because do they have to play more two tight end sets, Nick, which we talked about a lot last week, which I believe that they will. I mean, you thought Tom Brady threw the ball quick before. I mean, this year he is trying to get that ball out of his hand in 2.1 second. Like, because with this offensive line and not knowing – who's going to be in front of him? Now, who's going to play right tackle? We didn't know who was going to play left tackle. This is going to be a problem for New England.
And if you look at it from 30,000 feet, they lost their number one receiver, Brandon Cooks, for nothing this year. Because they traded Cooks away for the pick that became Isaiah Wynn. Now, they hope long-term they will get those.
Right.
But for the 2018 season, you have outgoing your number one receiver, Brandon Cooks, and incoming, nothing. You also remember, they lost their swing tackle, Cam Fleming. He went to Dallas. Nate Solder, we know, signed with the Giants. So right now, their starting right tackle is Marcus Cannon, who I actually think is a fine player. And their left tackle is Trent Brown. How'd they get Trent Brown? Well, they traded down 50 spots in the third, fourth round with San Francisco. Like, this is what Trent Brown was worth to San Francisco. The Patriots traded away the 95th pick, and San Francisco gave away Trent Brown and the 143rd pick. So it's not the 95th pick for him. It's 50 spots in the draft. Like,
right.
That's their starting left tackle right now. It ain't great, as one would say, and of all the rookie first-round picks that you thought were going to make an impact this year, he's the most notable one to come to mind of any team to be lost for the season already. And we went into the draft saying we thought the Pats were definitely going to get a tackle, and we thought they were definitely going to get a backup quarterback. They punted on the backup quarterback, fine, as long as Brady's healthy. And now, effectively, they punted on the tackle with their highest pick. Like, this wasn't the 31st pick, wasn't second-round pick, 23rd pick. The highest the Patriots been drafting in the first round in a very long time. They took this guy, and now he doesn't get to play. Dante Scarnecchia is the name, because we hear Coach Mangini, who's going to be out here later, speak glowingly about him. The offensive line coaches never get love. But he's got a lot of work to do now, because you have one less guy to deal with, and now, do we think they're not going to have another offensive line injury all year? Do we think there's going to be no one else on the, like, what's the margin of error? Your swing tackle leaves, your starting left tackle leaves, your draft pick's injured. It's a tough situation.
And they got no dominant running game, and they got no wide receiver outside that can put pressure on you. For me, if I'm playing New England, if I play them early, I'm going after Tom Brady. He's going to have to throw the ball outside, and them wide receivers are going to have to beat me, because I am blitzing him. I am putting all the pressure on that offensive line to be able to make a bunch of adjustments.
And when you say going after him early, keep in mind, early, that first month of the season, he doesn't even have Edelman.
Yes.
So, like, you need Gronk in that first month to be an even more valuable receiving threat. He might have to stick in and block along with Dwayne Allen. Like, again, the sky's never falling in New England. I've learned that the hard way. But injuries matter, and talent matters, and who's outgoing and who's incoming matters.
All that being said, Patriots are still
13-3. I mean, of course.
there we go. It was a good but also not great night for Cam Newton. Friday against the Dolphins. Way to use your rig words, Jenna. 9-for-12, 89 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Panthers did get a boost from Christian McCaffrey, who ripped off a 92 yards on five carries, including a 71-yard touchdown run. Cam said afterwards, "I know I left plays out there. I have to be better, and I have to take full responsibility and accountability for that." All right, CeCe, what should we expect from Cam Newton and the Panthers' offense this season?
I expect their offense to be explosive. Yeah, we saw in the running game there, they've run the ball well with Carolina football since they were an expansion franchise. That's one thing. They play good defense, and they run the football. But they've added Norv Turner. So you have to realize that Cam has been very comfortable with Mike Shula as the offensive coordinator. And now having a new voice in his ear, a new philosophy, they're working on trying to change some things from Cam. So, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see some type of growing pains. I believe that this wide receiving core probably is as explosive and has more diversification from a talent standpoint, tight end to wide receiver to running back, than any roster Cam's been on. So I expect this to be one of Cam's best seasons. But this is also a guy that has been MVP. So when you've been MVP, like, I expect him to play at that level. I think Cam is going to win another MVP throughout his career.
Wow.
Yes, I believe he has that type of talent. I like the talent around him. Curtis Samuel, he becomes very, very important in his second year after a disappointing rookie season. And I'm very excited with the first pick in the draft,
DJ Moore.
He looks like he's going to be have a good NFL career, and I believe he's going to help Cam in this new adjustment to a Norv Turner type offense.
One of the reasons that I get so frustrated at times when people just look at Cam's raw passing numbers is because it disregards how big of an impact he has on the running game. Because I agree with Chris that the Panthers are going to potentially be a very dangerous running team. But their running back core is Christian McCaffrey, who is not a guy you look at all as an every down back, the 71-yard run notwithstanding, and C.J. Anderson, who Denver let go for nothing.
And
Cam Newton.
Yes.
Cam's the only quarterback in the league that if you said your running backs are Christian McCaffrey and C.J. Anderson, you're going to have a great running game, that you would believe it. And while I also think D.J. Moore is a very good addition, and I liked that pick, the Panthers, they're kind of the bizarro Cowboys as far as their success rate on first-round picks over the last few years. Like, first- and second-round picks, they've spent premium picks on Kelvin Benjamin, Coney Ealy, first- second-round picks. They're both on different teams now. Shaq Thompson, he's a good player, but then Devin Funchess in the second round, okay. Like, probably not the production you would like. 2 years ago, Vernon Butler was the first-round pick. I had to look up, has he been injured? What's his story? And then the corner Bradbury, who's been a good player for him. And then McCaffrey, who I think is a quality player, but nowhere near the quality you expected to get at the 8th overall pick. Like, the Panthers keep spending picks trying to get weapons for Cam, and they seem to be picking the wrong players.
Yeah, I think when Norv Turner is hired, people will talk about, well, what kind of impact will he have on Cam? I believe Christian McCaffrey, he'll have as big an impact because Norv loves to run the football and is very creative in the running game. How effective, as we could see in the preseason game against Miami, last year, Christian McCaffrey didn't have more than 66 yards rushing in a game. I mean, let alone a big run like this. So you can already see the effect of Norv Turner. And I believe that McCaffrey will benefit and Cam Newton will benefit.
What do you want to see Cam do differently this year besides his press conferences that he wasn't doing last year?
The same thing everyone asked for Cam is to be more accurate with the football, to not throw off your back foot as often.
Is that something you can come out and say, this year I'm going to be more accurate?
Well, I mean, you can't just make the decision. You have to put in the work in the offseason on your fundamentals, on your footwork, on the things that Cam has not done consistently throughout his career. The thing is this with Cam, and we grade, there's a bit of a Dwight Howard grade with Cam Newton, which is we grade you on a curve based on what your physical abilities say you should be able to do. Cam overall has been a really good player in this league, but we look at the fact that, well, physically, you should be the most dominant quarterback in the league. Like, you can throw the ball 60 yards in the air, you run a 4-4, you're big and strong, like all those things. And some far too often in his career, Chris can speak to this better than me, he's fallen back on those physical gifts rather than getting down to the fundamentals of it. But that's the one thing he's got to improve on to me is overall accuracy of the football, which comes from if he's throwing off the right foot, is he throwing, falling backwards, things like that.
Yeah, my biggest issue with players like Cam and I talked to people with Dez Bryant because people are like, man, Chris Carter does not like Dez Bryant. Different players, for me, come into this league with different expectations that I have for them based on seeing how guys like them in the past have converted from college over to the pro. So Dwight Howard, he didn't play in college. So he was a tremendous high school player, but his body would tell us that he's going to be, based on his athleticism, he's going to be a tremendous player. He never did develop. Now, Cam, the reason why we have a problem with Cam is because he's like an expert marksman, where I have seen him hit a bullseye from 300 yards away. And they've been like, wow, he can do that. I bring him up to 50 yards, he can't even hit the target. So it's the consistency of what I've seen with him. How often can we see that? Because we have seen guys get better throwing the football. So I don't think that the expectations for Cam, they haven't been real. I believe they've been fair, too. He is that kind of talent.
I mean,
and I saw him when he got his scholarship offer from Urban Meyer. I was on the field, and, man, this kid, he can be one of the game's all-time greats. That's why I'm hard on Cam.
And Jenna, to answer your question another way, because I think you knew I was going to say accuracy, let me do a bigger picture answer. Avoid the truly awful games. Like, see, you mentioned it a few weeks ago. There's only Alex Smith and Tom Brady had more games than Cam with a quarterback rating better than 120, but I think only DeShone Kizer had more games than Cam of a quarterback rating sub 70. Like, we know he's going to have those great games. The last game he played, that playoff game, the duel against Drew Brees, he was great. It's the games once a month where it's like, Cam had three interceptions, threw for 110 yards. And you're like, how the hell does that happen?
Those are the
games he's got to eliminate. And then if he just has average games plus the great games, he's the guy you want him to be.
All right, we've got to take a break. Coming up, is there a rookie quarterback flying under the radar?
Ooh.
Eric Mangini will be here to talk about that next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini is here. Hey, Coach, how was your weekend?
It was fantastic. Thank you.
Great. Mine was fantastic. Great. It was hot, but it was great to be back here. Got a lot of football to talk about.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
All right. So much for Josh Allen taking some time to learn NFL football.
Wasn't it raining this weekend?
They were both out of town.
We were both out of town.
In the same city, but they didn't meet up. Thank God.
Let's talk about it. I was I texted at like 11. Bill's starting quarterback AJ McCarron fractured his collarbone on Friday. Next man up, Josh Allen or CC's guy Nate Peterman. The good news, Allen looked pretty good. 9-13, 60 yards and a touchdown. The bad news, Nate Peterman. Allen will have to hold off CC's just absolute favorite player if he wants to start the Bills opener. So, Coach, how much of a challenge would it be now for the Buffalo Bills starting Josh Allen week one, if that's the route they're going
to
go?
Well, it's challenging to start any rookie week one and to try to get used to the speed. So they're going through this process now with the preseason games where that's one level up from practice. But when you actually get into those games, it's a totally different speed. And the first game of the season, to me, is one of the hardest because you don't know what you're going to get from your opponent. They've had all offseason to try new things. They haven't showed in the preseason. So you're putting a rookie in there who's seeing a variety of coverages, but it's not only the coverages that you have prepared them for, but it's other things. It's new blitzes, so that there's volumes of stuff that goes into that first game. Brian Daboll, who's the offensive coordinator, I've known for years. He was my offensive coordinator in Cleveland. We worked together in New England. I think he's very good. I think he is, he's going to have him extremely well prepared, and he's going to put him in a position to be as successful as possible. So to me, that gives him the best chance to have a quick start.
Josh Rosen actually had some really interesting quotes that I think can be applicable here this morning. Peter King's new, his version, what used to be Monday Morning Quarterback, but he's now with different network, and he wrote a column today where he talked to Josh Rosen. And Rosen talked about how in college he got to the line. He'd say, is this cover two? I think it's cover two. They'd snap the ball. He'd be like, oh, it's cover three? Make the throw. And then he talked about how drastically different it is now, even in just preseason games. He's like, I get to the line. I have to make checks. I have to potentially audible. They're showing me one defense. And then all of a sudden I realize they're showing me that because they want me to think when it's that. He explains it how it is. It's not quite going from English to Mandarin, but it's close, like in how different that is. And Josh Rosen went to big-time school, playing big-time programs with big-time, million-dollar-a-year defensive coordinators at other Pac-12 schools. This is where Josh Allen's at a serious deficit. Even if you believe in the talent, even if you believe of all the quarterbacks, he has the highest potential, he's also the one I think most everyone agreed was the least ready to start right now. The guy who struggled the most against any type of competition while in college. The guy who relied the most on athleticism and arm talent rather than schematic advantage at college. And now all of a sudden he could be the first quarterback of this class to start? Like, that's, none of that sounds good to me. None of that sounds, fair is not a word in the NFL, but fair for what his long-term success is, that, okay, you were the least prepared, you were the rawest, you were the biggest project. Go start week one of the season.
But your other option is a guy who struggled last year, having seen defenses, having practiced and played, and having and
sure,
knowing the Buffalo Bills.
I think the biggest problem is his overall arm strength, because when you watch the highlights and you watch him throw the football, you're like, wow, this kid can be special. But, Nick, you mentioned all the things that young quarterbacks struggle with. Now, I'm going to point out something. He does have a big, big arm. You talked about all the play recognition, the defense recognition. I want to look right over Nick's shoulder. You see that? You see that windup that Josh has? You see how far that ball is away from his ear? It takes a long time to be able to do that. So, even if he doesn't know what the coverage is. And once he does know, okay, I'm going to throw to this guy, man, he's got that big windup that you're going to see. And it gives DBs, it gives defensive coordinators an opportunity to be able to pounce on wherever that ball is going to go. So, man, Brian Daboll, he's got his work cut out for him because the organization, they love this kid. I talked to the head coach in Sean McDermott. He loves him. I talked to the quarterback coach. They love him, and they think that he's going to be very, very good. But that big windup and recognizing where that ball is going to go, that is going to be a problem for at least the first part of his rookie year, Coach.
And one of the things that I've always liked about Brian as a coordinator and as a coach is he would spend a lot of time trying to figure out what you do well and making sure that that game plan represents what gives you the best chance to be successful. And he understands what it's like to have a rookie quarterback. He understands the learning that goes into that. So I trust that he'll put him in a position to be as successful as it can. Now, the other edge that Brian has is he started on defense. So he understands coverages. He understands how to teach coverages. And I think that's going to help Josh. There's a lot of offensive coaches that have only coached offense. So even though they understand coverages to a degree, it's different. So I like that aspect, too.
He also, listen, Josh Allen is going to be a long term. It's not going to be fair to judge him based on week one, probably not even fair to judge him based on year one. But he is something of a Rorschach test for how you're going to judge football players coming out of college. Because all the analytics said, this guy's not worth a top 100 pick, much less a top 10 pick. And I don't want to say all, but the vast majority of just eye test for size, weight, arm strength. Like, okay, this guy could be a franchise quarterback. My concern is, and it's not fair to just do apples to apples like this, I know another guy that went to a small school that was overdrafted in my eyes in the first round because of his size, arm strength, things like that. His name is Paxton Lynch. And in a couple weeks, he's probably about to get cut because he had all the tangibles as far as measurables, metrics, but you looked at his production in college and said he wasn't that accurate. He wasn't that good. Like, if he's that good, why wasn't he better? And those guys, there's not a long list of those guys that were inaccurate, unproductive in college that turned it on in the pros.
Nick, I disagree with you as far as this being a test on the big, strong quarterback. Man, since I've been associated with the league, and that's a long time, over 30 years, they're going to draft a guy. If the guy can hum it, if he can throw it, if he's got arm talent, the NFL is going to draft him. Look at Blake Bortles. He came from UCF. A little smaller as far as competition. Big, strong guy at the combine. He passed the test. What's the difference between Josh Allen and Blake Bortles?
But I guess that's kind of my point. Is like Blake Bortles been a disaster?
They're always going to be drafted. I wouldn't say he's been a disaster.
Oh, he's been a disappointment.
Because there have been guys who couldn't play at all.
Sure.
And what analytics are you talking about? Because if there were any analytics that could accurately predict the success of a quarterback, whoever produced that would be a billionaire because everybody would want it. So we can say analytics. You've got to draft traits. You've got to draft with the idea of, okay, he went to that school. So he's probably not as developed as those other quarterbacks are.
Yes.
So his ceiling is higher. Sometimes you get these quarterbacks from big colleges. They've got a huge advantage, but they don't have much growth because they've already had a high level of coaching.
And I'm not acting like these are my analytics that I created, the algorithms or the formulas. But what I will tell you is I have not seen anyone that's been able to produce something that will say this guy will hit. But they have shown relatively well over history being able to put in what your college production was at this position and say whether you won't hit. Like, does that make sense as far as...
No, I'd love to see that.
Okay, well, so I can putting in what your accuracy numbers were, what your numbers were against your best competition, it does not let you know this guy's going to make it. But it can cross a few guys off the list. Hackenberg's one of those guys. He was one of... Now, we don't know yet with him, but one of the reasons that there was a big split on this player was because all those numbers tests said there's never been a successful NFL quarterback with this college resume. Now, there's always a first, but there's never been one with this college resume, and now he might have to start week one.
Why not sit him and let him just watch a little bit? Why throw him right in?
Because we saw Peterman. Because he was calling
Peterman had a decent preseason. And he can still play quarterback. I mean, he's probably a little more experienced than Josh Allen has.
The only thing stopped Peterman from throwing six interceptions was they pulled him out.
I get that. But look, we've all had a bad day. He had a little bit worse day than some do, but that doesn't mean you can't grow. So look, it was bad. Yeah. It was bad.
It's hard.
Have the potential to grow.
It's hard to do number two on yourself and smell good. Okay.
Well, I mean, Cleveland went 0-16, and they've got the same crew in there. They're hoping for growth.
Jackson still has a job.
It's kind of like they sent that diaper off to Green Bay to Sean Kaiser. That's what happens. Okay. All right, baby power won't cure that.
Coach, stick around. Coming up, why might Dak not have to be lights out for the Cowboys to win the NFC East? That answer. First things first. How did the Cowboys do this weekend? Well, it depends on who you ask. Dak Prescott went a respectable 10 for 15 with 86 yards and a touchdown in his three possessions. Their defense was on point, shutting out the Bengals in the first half. Bit of bad news for the boys, though. All-pro guard Zach Martin forced to leave with a knee injury. But according to reports, he did avoid significant damage. All right, Coach, let's focus on the defense first. How good do the Cowboys need their defense to be if they're going to compete this year?
I think their defense is going to have to be really good. I think the defense, though, does have the advantage of the fact that the offense is going to eat up so much time. They're going to have the opportunity, I think, in most games to be able to come out, be fresh. I would imagine there'll be sustained
now,
drives.
From a philosophy standpoint, I didn't mean to cut you off, but just explain to us Why, if you were coaching a defense, why are these defenses that have offenses that run the ball, why is it easier or why do they play just from a not just eating up time? Why do they typically play less time on the field?
Well, whenever you have a complementary system and you can offensively, you can chew up time, you can give the defense a chance to go to the sidelines, sit down with the coaches, go through the adjustments, go through the pictures. To me, that's a huge advantage because now, and you also have the edge of getting your guys fresh for the next series. It's really difficult when you're in a run and shoot offense or with a coordinator or head coach who wants to just keep pushing the ball, and then it's three and out, your defense is back out. Like any group, it wears down. And in the later in the game, it becomes a real problem.
We saw, one of the reasons New Orleans had really bad defense for a long time is there's a lot of reasons. Just coaching, talent, overall players. But another one of the reasons was, as great as he is, Drew Brees, and the offense, if you're going to throw the ball as often as the Saints had basically every year until last year, there's going to be a lot of instances where by the time they've sat down on the bench, it's third and 10 and there's another incompletion. They're back out there, right? Like, because of that philosophy. It is not a coincidence that last year, the year that New Orleans had more of a dedicated running attack with Ingram and Kamara, that was also the year, that Saints defense isn't so bad. Now, part of that was the defensive rookie of the year out of Ohio State, Marshawn Lattimore. Mm-hmm. And part of it was talent, but also it was they didn't have to defend as much. Like, that's the biggest thing the Cowboys have going for them or had going for them defensively, I would argue, in the past. And now what they have, I think, is some legitimate front seven talent. Because you know DeMarcus Lawrence, they believe in him at 14 sacks last year, the franchise tag him. They spent a first-round pick on Taco Charlton a year ago. They expect more from him. He had a good flash play this preseason game. Randy Gregory, they were without him for a year. He'll be back. Mm-hmm. David Irving, he's going to miss the first month of the season, but he'll be there. Jalen Smith, who was a top-five talent, suffered a devastating knee injury that turned into a foot injury. He looked as close to the Notre Dame Jalen Smith that I'd seen this past weekend. So all of a sudden there's talent plus the benefit of only playing those 28 minutes.
I think the one thing Coach is saying is very, very important is that this organization, that the veteran offense and defensive coordinators, that they are married to each other. That when they're putting in game plans and when they're trying to execute with inside the game, that they understand who's on the other side. So Marinelli, when he's sitting over there and he's looking at the Polaroids and they're looking at the computers and they're trying to make adjustments, they realize that, man, I need this defense. And Scott Linehan, I need them to stay on I need this offense to stay on the field. I need them to be able to grind it out. The best teams that I ever played on, our biggest problem, when Brian Billick used to say this, was he's tell defense coordinator, I don't know when we're going to score. In 1998, we'd be like, I don't know, how long is the play? How long is the drive going to be? Like, when is Moss going to just act up? Might be three plays, might be eight plays. But typically, when you can't predict, it's not an advantage to that defense that, wow, yeah, they are a quick strike team, or yeah, they're in a good offensive team, but is it married to the defense? And in Dallas, Jenna, they do have that. In Scott Linehan, he will be married to that defense with Marad Marinelli. So this organization, as they go forward and try to win games, they have to be able to do it together.
This is interesting, too. This is another team that overhauled the coaching staff. So they kept the coordinators in place, but Eberflus, he's now in Indianapolis. He's their defensive coordinator. I think they moved on from the D-line coach to the DB coach. So there's going to be some learning from that group to try to get to a cohesive package. And then how does the scheme change? What's the evolution of this defense from Marinelli's standpoint? Typically, it's been a cover two with a little bit of zone blitz mixed in, and every now and then there's some man-to-man. Is it going to evolve, or are they just going to stay with that core and keep trying to push that forward?
So the one thing we've talked about all preseason is that they're only really lacking in one area, the Dallas Cowboys, and that's the receiving core. Is the defense good enough that they may not have to worry so much about that receiving core? I mean, is it good enough to no?
No. Well, I mean, we got to see how well the secondary plays, and I'm not totally sold on the secondary at that point. At this point, now a secondary is helped substantially by good pass rush, but their ability to just line up and play man-to-man coverage if they have to is going to be interesting to see. And then look, Sean Lee, when he's out, they're not very good. When he's in, they're pretty good. he needs to stay healthy because he makes that go.
Yeah, I think also Jalen Smith playing better. So if they would lose a Sean Lee, they could slide Jalen over and he could be that linebacker that could play three downs for them.
No, I from a skill perspective, I just wonder where Jalen is from a leadership perspective. I think Sean gives a lot of leadership and he gets everybody lined up, which when he's out of the lineup, you see the communication goes down dramatically and the production goes
Coach,
down dramatically.
I have a question for you. At this late stage, we know Dez is not on a team. If you're Dallas, would you take Dez for like the minimum, above the minimum?
No. I think once they got divorced, and I think they need to stay divorced and everybody needs to go and find a new partner, I don't think they can go back at this point.
But every once in a while, you like to drive back over there because you kind of know the temperature of the cookies.
Right. Yeah, but you.
Well, okay, you're not gonna, okay. Yeah. We're good. So, anyway, all right. We'll see you a little bit later in the show just to talk cookies and other baking situations.
Speaking of, think about it, Coach.
The Food Network.
What?
The Food Network.
Speaking of Dez Bryant, did he blow his chance with the Browns? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to Dez Bryant. When we left here on Friday, it seemed like just a matter of time before Dez was officially a Cleveland Brown. But then Saturday and Sunday happened, and now not so much. Head coach Hugh Jackson says Josh Gordon's return wouldn't rule out signing Dez, but it's been reported that Dez is no longer a priority for the team. So, CC, are you surprised the Browns aren't making Dez a priority now that they have Josh back?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's the way this league is, man. It's just amazing if you make the wrong decision or if you just tell a team, hey, you know something, I just want to think about it. Now, I don't know how much intel Dez had of Josh's situation. When I was going to Cleveland, that would have been one of the main things besides what kind of offense y'all running, how y'all trying to utilize me. Man, what's the deal with Josh Gordon?
And one of the reasons isn't just, oh, it's a wide receiver. What position does Josh Gordon play?
X receiver.
What's the only position Dez Bryant's ever played?
Only one we have seen him play in the league has been X receiver. That's receiver to the boundary. And it's hard because they got a couple other young receivers. And if they keep both of these veteran receivers, like, you really hurt the growth of Antonio Callaway. And you only got one football. You mentioned they got three running backs. Mm-hmm. Like, they're going to be a team that can throw the ball and run the ball. But, man, you can't. It's hard to have Landry, Dez Bryant, and Josh on the same roster because I don't know if you have enough speed because the carryover between Josh and Dez, they do a lot of the same stuff.
And Josh does them better. Like, Josh Flatley does him better. He's bigger than Dez Bryant, I think he's an inch taller. They're about the same build. He's faster than Dez Bryant. He's done it. He's produced at similar levels in much smaller sample sizes with far inferior quarterbacks. Like, I was more taken aback than I think than you, Chris, or Coach Mangini when we talked Friday. Jenna, you and I both, that Dez didn't come to an agreement Thursday. And now that we know Josh Gordon was in the Browns facility Saturday.
Yes.
I don't think it's far-fetched to say they got word Thursday that Josh is completing his program. And I don't think it's far-fetched to think that maybe they were going to make Dez Bryant an offer. And maybe they, as you know, you got John Dorsey in one room, Hugh Jackson in another room, someone's talking to Josh Gordon's people, and all of a sudden, this is the conversation they have with Dez and his people. You know what? Let's break for today. Let's all think about, our meeting today. Let's meet back in the morning. And then they get together like, hey, Josh going to be here in 24 hours. Do we need to make this guy an offer?
And you have to consider the Browns are only on the hook for $800,000 paying Josh this year. Now, I don't know how much Dez was going to make. Josh is familiar with the offense. He's a better fit for Jarvis Landry because his overall speed and being a deep threat that Dez isn't. But when you look at that price tag, right, man, it's a hard spot that Dez is in that we didn't see.
So let's talk about Dez Bryant now, because last week he insinuated that the Browns were one of a number of teams that he's going to go work out for. We don't seem to think or believe that there are any other teams. We haven't heard about this. You have to wonder if that 3-year, $21 million deal the Ravens had offered him a few months back might have been the thing he should have done to get himself back in, because it doesn't seem like he has many other options. Where does Dez Bryant go from here, CeCe?
I still think Dez is in a better position than signing with Baltimore. The reason why Baltimore is going to struggle throwing the ball, Baltimore's trying to break in a rookie quarterback in Lamar Jackson. Flacco potentially is on his last year there. And they have Crabtree, so the skill set, there's a lot of carryover with two possession wide receiver. So I still think that someone could get injured. Dez could still end up on the right team. And I believe that Cleveland still has Dez on their board if something happens to Josh, or if they get another guy injured during the season. So I wish he was with a team now, because I'd like to see him play a couple preseason games inside this new organization. And I know it's challenging. It's challenging for skilled guys to be able to pick up a system. When you've been running one system predominantly throughout your career and trying to learn a system in a couple weeks to get ready for a game, that part I'm concerned about with Dez.
Today is August 20th.
Indeed.
The season starts September 16th. Or September 6th, pardon me, I misstated it. Is Dez Bryant on a roster September 6th? Jenna Wolf asked this question 4 months ago, and you and I both said it's crazy to even ask. Like, the players this talented, even with baggage, are not unemployed at the beginning of a season. I now think it is more likely than not that this is the first time I believe this. I'd have lost this bet to you a week ago. I now think it's more likely than not that when the NFL season kicks off, Eagles, Falcons, September 6th, that Dez Bryant's still a free agent. And that is shocking to me, but we're running out of days, and he's running out of teams.
Yeah, no, I mean, I told you guys long before, don't worry about it. We're going through free agency. Don't be concerned. But Dez Bryant has to be concerned. And if you even go back to some of the intel stuff that you didn't like, Nick, I'm sure other teams, when they're looking back at it, Coach Mangini didn't like it. The Browns general manager said he tried to call him. He said he couldn't get a return phone call. So, wow, what kind of guy doesn't have a job and doesn't return Dorsey's phone call? So other teams, they have that intel also. And to me, it's just not good for Dez this late and to not be on a team.
I'm terrible at gambling otherwise.
I know. It would have been your best bet. You would have lost. I think I said $1,000.
Dang it. Coming up, let's talk some basketball. Are Steph and Clay going to be Warriors for life? They seem to think so. That's next on First Things First. Back here on First Things First, time for Say What? As Alabama begins their quest for 3 championships in 4 years, Nick Saban was asked if he's concerned about a lack of progress from his backups. And his answer was definitely interesting. Say what?
Well, I've been concerned about this all along. I mean, so I don't even know why you would ask the question, because you all don't think, you just think we just, you know, whatever happens, we get another player. And everything's going to be perfect. All of our fans think that. You all think that. That's what you write about. That's the message that you send out there. And, yeah, I worry about it all the time. I may be the only one.
For a guy who helms an organization that just announced, what is it, a $600 million, like, facility and
renovation.
$600 million.
One that they just finished the last renovation.
Which, by the way, $600 million, that would be if you wanted to pay each player $50,000, 120 players, you could do that. Oh, for 100 years. But neither here nor there, because they need the new facility. He's angry a lot, man. Like, he don't like when they write that Alabama's not going to be great. He evidently doesn't like when they write they're going to be fine no matter what. Like, I don't. And by the way, the reason people might think you might another player is, it seemed like in the national championship game, you went from one quarterback who was 26-2 to
halftime. Wait.
Okay.
Here comes a five-star.
Right. I mean,
you got 35-star players. I mean, either you're taking a deuce and either a good player's coming out or money. Either one, Nick. Like, either one. You don't need no tissue. Keep it moving. For real. How much money does he make?
What? About $9
million. Like there goes a hundy.
I feel like we should move on.
Okay.
Time for some stories to start your morning.
Good job.
Yes. Adrian Peterson isn't ready to hang up his cleats. The 7-time Pro Bowler is meeting with Washington today in hopes of extending his career to a 12th season.
They ever do that on the Today Show, Jenna?
Never talked about deuces on the Today Show. Peterson had just 529 yards on less than 3.5 yards per carry last season with the Saints and Cardinals. See, can AP still contribute in the NFL?
Well, that's the thing. Nick Saban can do that. But in the NFL, when you go try to do that, you end up going to number two and it's a little runny. You get an old guy.
No.
You get an old guy who used to be solid, but now he's not solid.
Okay.
Might catch a little down your leg and that'd be
early time. In the morning.
I mean, I'm just.
DeAndre just fainted.
Listen, seriously, Adrian Peterson.
Either that or bubble guts.
He's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
It's a lot of hot air. I mean, do you want something
just
solid?
Just go on to the next one.
Do you want something
solid?
To go,
we don't.
Used to be.
Jameis Winston is going to miss the first three games of the regular season to suspension, but that didn't stop him from impressing on Saturday. The fourth-year quarterback went 13 for 18, 226 yards, two touchdowns against the Tennessee Titans. Nick, how good can Jameis be on the field if he straightens things out off the field?
It's so hard to talk about this guy because I don't want to minimize the off-the-field allegations and now the thing he's admitted to. But if we're talking strictly on the field, he's gotten better each and every year. He's done it on a team that I think has mediocre talent outside of Mike Evans and him and Gerald McCoy on the defensive side of the ball. I think he can still be a star quarterback in this league.
Absolutely. I think every year we look for breakout players. Last year, everyone was on Jameis Winston. But a lot of times, when the player doesn't fulfill that promise, we just forget about him. But a lot of times, we should put him on the breakout player for that next year. After this, let's see his overall maturity. I think he's going to be better as a quarterback. Also, Nick Saban tried to take he tried to recruit him, but it didn't come out all air.
It didn't.
Just all air.
He's got more, apparently. Moving on to the Cardinals.
Jameis went to Florida State. Dang it.
Moving on to Cardinals rookie Josh Rosen. Arizona moved up the draft to draft the quarterback, and it looks like it might pay off. Rosen finished 10 for 16, 107 yards and a touchdown in just his second preseason game. Nick, how impressive has Rosen looked so far to you?
He had a really shaky first preseason game, but he was much better in this preseason game. Now, we've seen so many instances of players and teams be awesome in the preseason and then disasters and vice versa. But I really did like some of his quotes to Peter King in this morning's Good Morning Football in America, whatever his new article's called, that was great, where he said the difference in getting the line of scrimmage, diagnosing defenses, having to check out of things. It looks like that intellect, which he was almost ridiculed for coming out of college, is going to help him as he adjusts to be an NFL pro.
Because of his draft selection and because of the organization, because they realize they're in transition, Arizona Cardinals, I believe it's to his benefit having good veteran players, Larry Fitzgerald, to be able to learn around. Larry's been very impressed with what he's seen from Josh and believe he's going to have a very good NFL career.
All right, we'll end with Russell Wilson. The four-time Pro Bowler looked in mid-season form in the Seahawks' second preseason game. Wilson finished 13 of 21, 193 yards. Chris, how well does Russell Wilson need to play if that Seahawks defense is no longer going to be the dominant unit we know it is?
I mean, Russell's been amazing. He's had an amazing career. Last year, battling through everything he did, is he underrated as a quarterback?
Yes.
I believe that he is because there's no offensive line. Up the last 2 years that Seattle has spent less resources to put in front of him, totally opposite of what the Dallas Cowboys have done as far as all the resources they put into their offensive line. So he's been amazing to me. You can see that even as his wide receivers, Doug Baldwin, I'm concerned about him. He's missed a lot of training camp with a knee that's hampered him. But when you have a young quarterback and then you start to see the wide receivers start to become stars, that's where you start to see the marriage and that overall effect that you want. Coach Mangini talks about when they come into the room, does it make the group better? That's what he's done. So now they don't have a running game. They don't have an offensive line. And the defense is still not great. And we still think of Seattle as a playoff team. So as long as Russell is there, I believe they're going to win in Seattle.
They found a way to win 9 games last year. I mean, think about the injuries they had. Richard Sherman pops his Achilles. Cam Chancellor has what ended up being a career-ending injury. Like they acquired their left tackle in week 8 of the season because they didn't have one in a trade with Houston for Dwayne Brown. And he still makes things happen. I don't even know who the running backs. I know technically who the running backs have been since Marshawn Lynch, but no one that has proven themselves. Their best running back looks like a guy in Chris Carson. They got in the 7th round. Listen, Russell Wilson can see eye level. with Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Drew Brees. Like, when Chris says he's underrated, it's because people talk about him like, oh, he's one of the top 10 guy. No, no, no. He's one of the four best quarterbacks in this league. Now, you might say he's fourth, fine. But that's how good he is.
So why don't we talk about him that way?
Because early on, we gave all the credit to the defense.
Yep.
And so that sometimes your first impression is your every impression. And so once, and early on, we just said he was a game manager. And people forget, what his first playoff game ever. They're down, I think, 21 at or 18 at halftime to Atlanta. He brings them all the way back. You look at him, career passer rating, third all-time NFL history. His touchdown interception ratio is top five all-time in NFL history. Like, he has the statistical profile, the winning profile, but when they won instantly, Legion of Boom, mm-hmm. the defense, game manager Marshawn Lynch is kind of how what we said about him. But, man, oh, man, how many quarterbacks could succeed with his offensive line?
Not many.
Because of the escapability
part. Yeah, because and that's the part, Jenna. He should be your favorite quarterback because no quarterback plays more off schedule than mm-hmm. Russell Wilson. There's no. He reminds me of an old-time Fran Tarkenton because they're coming and he is retreating backwards and making something happen. One of the things besides Russell's superior throwing ability is that he is a great athlete who is scrambling and running but trying to throw the ball. And that's why he's really, really dangerous to the defense.
If you're that good off schedule, as you call it, does that automatically make you that great if you stay in the pocket? Like, if he had a great offensive line, would he still be as good as he is? Or is that part of what makes him
so good?
Well,
this is the thing. This is the difference between him and Michael Vick. Michael Vick was great with the offense was off schedule. But he wasn't great when it was on schedule. Russell Wilson can beat you with his feet, or he can drop back straight back in the pocket, and you tell him, which he's had sprained ankles and or knees that were bothering him, and you can't scramble, you can't run, and still throw the football, and he's still as good as we see in the business.
And while he's been dinged because of that offensive line having to do so much, his ability to stay healthy, despite all the punishment he takes and how often he runs, is a testament to the shape he comes in, how good of a body he has. Like, he is one of the truly great, great players in this league. And that's the only reason Seattle's in contention for the playoffs. I look at the rest Yes. of their roster, and I would never think of that team as in the NFC being a playoff team. Because Russell Wilson's there, I can't dismiss him.
All right, let's move on to the NBA now, where every team has a chance to win a title. Mm. Said nobody who really knows anything about the NBA. Here's what we're talking about. Steph Curry told Bill Simmons that he wants to be a Warrior for life, and he's not alone. Klay Thompson said he wants to be a Warrior for life over the weekend as well. We don't know what Durant and Draymond will do, but it looks like the two original Splash Brothers want to be there for the long haul. Nick, you think the Warriors can do the virtual impossible and keep this entire team intact long enough to never lose again?
No, I don't think they can keep the team intact, but it's not because of Steph, it's not because of Klay, and it's not because of Draymond. I think the guy that changed how we look at the Warriors and made them go from an all-time great team to maybe the all-time greatest team in Kevin Durant, I don't think he's finishing his career as a Warrior. I think that Durant's the one guy that could leave. You mentioned Draymond. Draymond's a great defensive player and a perfect player for this team. But I don't know a lot of teams that are looking at Draymond Green and say, I want to give him a max contract to be our best guy. Because if he's your best guy, then you are a very limited offensive team. But he's perfect for Golden State because they don't need anything offensively from him. They need toughness, defense, and leadership. Durant's the one guy that changed this team, and he's the one guy that can change it again. Klay is interesting just because his dad played for the Lakers. Does Klay want to be the best guy on a team? But Klay's getting his money. He's getting his rings. He's getting to chill. And why Steph would want to change, like people like maybe he wants to go to Charlotte, that'd be one hell of a move to go from the most glamorous team in the league to one of the least. And so, no, I think Durant's the only one that could change this.
Yeah, I think when you've been a part of an organization that has grown, and not just because of the championships, the overall economics and the optics. If you look at where was Golden State 6 years ago as far as how many eyeballs, if we could, and we have people that can do this, how many articles they have, how many hits on social media. Like, this is a different organization. It's like they were one of the worst, and then now they are the best, and they have all the attention. Why would they want to go? See, people have been like, Well, Steph, he maybe wants to go to Charlotte. Well, why would you go to Charlotte? And Clay, oh, his dad played with the Lakers. Well, that doesn't mean that Clay, because Clay's personality is totally different than his dad. The relationship with ownership there, the new facilities, new arena, new practice facility. Like, why would you want to leave? And they have it where, which LeBron, this was always the problem with LeBron in Cleveland, players don't want to go to Cleveland. Players want to go to San Francisco, go to Golden State, and they have all the bells and whistles, let alone now that they have the resume and they have the team history. Like, no, I thought that Steph, if you had to put a gun to his head, yes, he would want to stay there, and he should. And Clay should want to stay there because their brand says Golden State basketball.
And I'm going to add one thing that I don't know that anyone has said on television yet, but it's going to start to become something people talk about, so I'll open the doors to it now. A year from now, they open a new arena in San Francisco. The Warriors have already sold out all those, the courtside seats, but they've been very protective about who bought those seats. Why does that matter? Some of the richest people in the world are going to be sitting in those courtside seats. You're talking about the owner, the Amazon, Apple, Twitter, all those guys. For these guys, for the creme de la creme of the league, the ability to develop those relationships on a night-in, night-out basis, to high-five those guys, to talk about their post-career ability to turn into 100-millionaire potential billionaires is greater in that city than anywhere else. So if you're Steph Curry and 41 nights a year, who's the guy that runs Amazon?
Bezos.
And you can develop a relationship with the richest man in the world 40 times a year by impressing him. That's a real thing. That is a real one of the reasons that Golden State has an added recruiting tool now is the people who are going to be sitting courtside at those games. Now, the team won't tell you who bought those tickets, but I know in NBA circles it's almost looked at the way like Florida and Texas have no state tax and NBA teams hate. They're like, when the free agency pitch meetings, we tell them you're going to get more money. That's something there.
Is this bad for basketball, CC? We talk about a super team a year or two, but if you can get now four or five guys that want to stick around for a long time, is that something you're like, oh, well, here we go. This is what the NBA is going to look like the next couple of years.
No. I hope they drafted them. This part of their team is organic compared to the other parts that they think are organic. No, they should be able to stay with their teams. The reason why the Bulls broke up wasn't because they didn't want to play. They decided they weren't going to pay them. That's part of the reason why Michael Jordan and they broke up that band. No, if you can stay together, it's better for basketball history, and it's better, more importantly, for Steph and for Clay and the brand with Golden State.
Let me ask you a question about Clay real quick. Do you think there's anything to Clay wanting to find out, what does it look like if I'm the best player on a team?
I think that's more of a Nick Wright. I haven't heard that as much until you've come on TV. Like, I haven't heard players talk about it. Like, oh, when I'm considered either the best player in the league or are you considered the best player on your team? Guys don't necessarily look at that because they know they need great players to be able to win. So do you want to win?
That's why I was asking. That's why I wanted your perspective, an athlete's perspective. Because a fan's perspective, that is something, you said a Nick Wright thing, but that is something basketball fans talk about. Like, if this guy's the best player on a team, how good can that team be? Questions we have. Like, we know we are learning, Russell Westbrook's your best player. How good are you? Kevin Durant's your best player. How good are you? Like, with Clay.
Who do you think's more happy with their career, Clay or Russ?
I think Clay's probably the happiest guy in the league. Clay gets paid as much as anybody.
The pressure's not on him.
Of the scrutiny.
So, and Russ is the best guy on his team.
Mm-hmm.
Clay is with Boogie.
As content as can be. You're right. And Clay
second,
is the
third best.
Clay's the third best guy on the team at best.
And
maybe
I'm cool
the fourth
with that.
Best now. Yeah. Clay's cool. Clay's happy.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, just how good will the Browns be with Josh Gordon back? Also, Josh Gordon came back. That's next. First things first.
Hey, think of
back here on First Things First, get your IFBs in so we can make sure we hear everybody in the control room.
That's Coach's Jenna's inner monologue. Good to see you, Coach Mangini.
I wonder what Jenna's thinking. Oh, there it is.
Today,
yeah, Jenna's having a good time.
I'm having a great morning. It's Monday. Good. Here we go. Coach is back with us, as you could tell from a second handshake. The Browns got some good news this weekend. Their all-pro wide receiver, Josh Gordon, back with the team after working on his mental and physical health. Head coach Hugh Jackson is hopeful that Gordon could be on the field as early as week one when the Browns take on the Steelers. Gordon still has to pass additional steps in the league's substance abuse program before he does see any action, though. Coach, assuming he remains clean and focused, how good can the Browns be with Josh Gordon on the field?
Well, this changes things pretty dramatically offensively, because when you have to deal with a guy like Josh Gordon, you're going to have to push coverage, and you're going to have to decide, are you going to designate your best cornerback to him? Are you going to just double team him? But you have to take him away. And when he was it 3 years ago? Was it 2015? When he was on, he was really, really difficult
Coach,
to deal with.
2013. Because 15 and 16 he missed, and 14 he only played five games.
Yeah, so we're projecting out a little bit, but
Coach,
the flashes that we
been
saw.
Coach, talking about him since 2016.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
But projecting back, if he can get to that form, it changes things. It changes the approach defensively, and they've got other weapons to complement him, and it helps Jarvis Landry substantially. I think the issue is where's their offensive line? They're figuring out what to do with Joe Thomas's leaving, mm-hmm. and they're trying to move Bitnoe out there, and they've got a young guy working at the left guard. So to me, that's a big question mark, is how does that offensive line play out? Will they have enough time? I love the quarterback potential of not losing games, which has been a huge problem in Cleveland. Those guys don't turn the ball over. That's been a strength of theirs, whether it's Baker Mayfield or Tyrod. They both have been massive strengths, so I like that too.
Yeah, I like the fact that Josh is back with the team, because I think even people – well, I know this. I know that people who go through what Josh is going through, they are better at doing their job when they're on their job compared to them and the anxiety that they have thinking about their job and are they going to lose their job. Because – it was on the board, would he ever play again the National Football League? Now, he's not back on the field yet, but he is at least back in the building. So if he is still a 1,000-yard receiver, his skill set, how it matches up with Jarvis Landry and the quarterback. We saw their wide receivers this year, and they just really have Jarvis Landry. How much it has improved because their quarterback in his decision-making. The offensive line and the defense, how good are they going to be? Those are question marks. Hughes not calling plays. We know Todd Haley calling plays. How is that going to work out? And when is he going to practice? Because after he practices, it still takes a couple weeks to get in game type of shape. So is that going to take a couple weeks in the regular season? So those things I still have to be answered there in Cleveland. But it is good to see that Josh is back. And Jarvis Landry is the leader of that wide receiving room. And I much prefer that compared to in the last several years, it's been Josh and all those younger players looking up to Josh. I'd much rather the younger players looking up to Jarvis Landry.
Go ahead.
I just wondered, too, from a coaching perspective, how can you plan for him to be there the whole time, because he hasn't been there? So you're excited about the possibility, obviously. You have tons of things that you can do with him, but how long is he going to be there? And you're trying to project that out, and you hope it's the whole year, but you need to give those other guys reps in his roles in case something does happen. So it's balancing getting him ready and then getting whoever would be in his role if he wasn't there ready, and trying to push that both together as they move into the season.
But assuming he is ready, assuming a couple weeks go by and he can get himself back on the field and focused and whatnot, does he give you a better chance to win than a guy like Dez Bryant would?
Yeah, like not, in my mind, it wouldn't even be close. I think Josh, when he's at his best and when he's playing really well, pretty dynamic guy.
He's one of the best receivers in the league when he's on the field.
And I think his average was 18 yards. He had 1,600 yards. He had 9 touchdowns. His size is an issue. He's got a lot of things that are really difficult from a defensive standpoint to match up with consistently.
Jenna, he's bigger, faster, has better hands than Dez, runs better routes, is better after the catch. The only thing is, he's been suspended a couple times.
He's been.
Right, so you gotta assume or hope that he's.
Because that's in there. Because if Dez, you would at least know that he was going to be there.
The 2013 season from Josh Gordon is a unicorn of NFL history. I don't know if people understand how difficult it is to catch nearly 90 passes and average nearly 19 yards per catch. When you see a guy average 19 yards per catch, it usually means he caught 22 balls One, you know, a couple like 60-yard touchdowns that inflate the average. He had 775 yards and five touchdowns in a month. In a month of football in four games. And by the way, the quarterbacks he's played with, the quarterbacks he's caught balls from in his career, Whedon, Hoyer, Campbell, Manziel, Thad Lewis, Connor Shaw, DeShone Kizer, Kevin Hogan, Cody Kessler. Like, that's his list. So Tyrod, even if you think Tyrod's mediocre, and I think he's better than that, he's better than everybody on that list. The best quarterback he's ever played with is Brian Hoyer, right? Like, of everyone I just mentioned there, maybe people like Jason Campbell for a month. Like, so, and then you look at the Browns just from afar, and you say, I think they've got three running backs that have pretty good running back potential. Nick Chubb, yes. Their top of the second round pick. Mm-hmm. Duke Johnson, their high pick last year. And Carlos Hyde, the guy they went out and got from San Francisco. David Njoku is a guy that looks great coming off the bus. Now, he's got to catch more balls. He's got to do a better job mm-hmm. catching balls. And I know you guys don't like me to overreact to Hard Knocks. I didn't love the moment in Hard Knocks when the coach said, after practice, you're catching 30 balls out of the jugs machine. And he was upset by that. It doesn't seem exactly great for a guy who's a first-round pick dealing with drops, but we know the talent's there. And then the receiving group, Landry as your stable possession guy, Josh is your deep threat, and Antonio Callaway is your slot receiver. I like all that. I like all of it as far as the skill position guys for Todd Haley to work with. Now, there's a lot of yeah buts. We don't know if Callaway's going to be suspended. We don't know if Josh is going to stay on the field. Like, we don't know if Joku can catch the ball consistently. I understand that. But if I'm painting the best picture, that's a lot of talent. It's a lot of talent skill position-wise.
But it's also, it can be very explosive. And I think if Josh is suspended, I hope that he's not. I hope he makes it through the season. I hope he goes on to have a stellar career. But, man, what an inside bombshell that would be. Not only for the Browns, but what message are they sending Antonio Callaway? What about the wide receiver coach who, I know it's not his call that Josh is there. It's the organization's call. So, coaches, you know, that overall continuity and the ability for this to go, like for this to implode is real there in Cleveland.
Yeah, Nick, after this, you should go work in Cleveland for sweet sales and sell luxury boxes. Because you were pretty compelling there. I was like, oh, wow, man. So if we could get that cut up and sent to that market, I think they'd appreciate it. But you did make a very good point. They have a lot of things that are complementing Josh that they probably didn't have during his big season. They've got a legitimate running game. They've got other receiving threats. They've got a potential middle-of-the-field threat from the tight end. They've got a quarterback that's competent and potentially much more than that and doesn't lose games. So I think all those things are great. Now the question is, can he be there throughout the course of the season, or is this a be there for a month
stop and
have to
and
leave
start.
For a month? And that makes it hard from a planning perspective. You do have to keep your eye on the left side of that offensive line, especially to see where that goes.
All right, Coach, stick around. Coming up, does Cam finally have the help he needs on offense? That's next on First Things First. Back here with Coach Mangini, we're talking Panthers. Panthers go as Cam Newton goes. Cam went 9 for 12 for 89 yards, one touchdown, one interception against the Miami Dolphins. And Christian McCaffrey showed us why his head coach Ron Rivera wants him to get the ball more. The second-year running back ripped off 92 yards on five carries, including a 71-yard touchdown run. Coach Mangini, what are we expecting from Cam and the Panthers on offense this season?
Well, I really like Norv Turner, and it's going to be interesting to see how this relationship works out. Norv did great things with Troy Aikman at the start of his career, and a lot of people credit Troy's development to Norv. So at this point in Norv's career, with a still relatively young quarterback, it's going to be fun to watch how those two work together. The most important thing from my perspective with Cam is his ability, not just for consistency, but when things aren't going well, the ability to climb out of that hole. I think sometimes he'll get in holes and then he keeps digging and the hole gets deeper. Will he and Norv be able to figure out a way when things aren't going well to be able to redirect things and center things and get back on track? That's the issue.
I think that last point is such a good one, because if people look at the 15-1 MVP year as an outlier year in Cam's career, because it is, he was way better that year and the team was than any other year he's been there. How did they get to 15-1? Well, probably because they started 6-0. And I know that sounds silly, but my point is, Cam seems to, it goes either, it, it, rolls downhill in a positive direction or a negative direction. Like, when he's smiling and he's doing his first down celebration, he really does seem to be one of the three, four best quarterbacks in football. But he also, and I think it's fair to say, of all the star quarterbacks, if things go poorly, he doesn't respond to that well, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it's really hard for some guys to, when things go poorly or they make a mistake, to recover from that. And then I think your point's well taken too, about when things are going well, God, things go really well. They just build, and you don't want that, because the game can be decided in the first quarter.
And that's, and Norv Turner, you think, can impact that?
Well, I'd like to think with his level of experience, with the range of guys that he's worked with,
yes,
that he'll be able to draw on those experiences and say, okay, Cam, this is what worked for me with these five quarterbacks. This is what worked with these five quarterbacks. Let's try some of these tools and see what works best for you.
And Norv, as a coordinator, he's really helped quarterbacks become more accurate. So to me, from the beginning, what is Cam's buy-in? Because I believe if Cam buys all the way into this new way of teaching, because in a long NFL career, we've seen Brady, we've seen Drew Brees, we've seen a lot of the elite quarterbacks that they had to either go through a philosophy change, either a team change, or how do I get better? When you start running out of talent, we saw Drew Brees. When he went from San Diego to New Orleans, he improved so much as a thrower of the football. And then Sean Payton opened up as far as the offensive play calling, and we saw that overall growth happen right there. Is Cam going to be able to just – what I always try to tell athletes is, every day do you submit your talent to the coach? Because if you do that, the chance of being great are better, because that's what great players do. That's what Tom Brady does not get credit for. Regardless of who is there in New England, yeah, besides Belichick, man, he goes to work and he is trying to get better. And I believe if Cam keeps that same attitude, he's had that through the offseason, if he keeps that, I believe we're going to see a much improved Cam.
It's just that I feel like we have the same conversation every single year. He needs to be more consistent. He can't play peaks and valleys. It doesn't work for him. When things are great, you're going to have a great game. And when things aren't, you basically know how the game is going to go. At some point, his eighth season, at some point, are you like, well, this is the guy. He's just an inconsistent guy. Or do you really think he can make
a change? Well, some other things have changed around him. And that force multiplier can be a guy like Norv Turner. Like, we have seen this in people's career, where you have a different offense or you have a different ear going into that person. That person decides, you know something? I am going to finally listen. So it's not the same old story with Cam Newton, because some things have changed. That organization, they have new ownership. There's a breath of fresh air there. He has Norv Turner. I believe in Norv Turner a lot like Coach. And I believe in Cam Newton's ability. And you have seen Cam where he has grown as just a pure, like, option quarterback to a guy that is able to decipher defenses and make big plays consistently.
And you hope as guys get older, there's an openness to trying new things. So there's an openness to coaching, and that leads to growth. And you got to be able to take your ego and put that aside too, because if you're dealing with an ego, that stunts growth as well. So the willingness on his part to say, okay, let me trust this, let me see where this is going, that's his responsibility. And to me, that's how you can start attacking inconsistency. You can start attacking those peaks and valleys, but it's got to come from him and his willingness to try things to overcome
that. You make a great point in trust. And I think that now, because Cam had a relationship with Mr. Richardson, the owner. Now they have a new owner. So I know Cam is trying to develop that. But I know the one person in football that Cam trusts is the head coach. The head coach decides that I'm going to move on from Mike Shula. I'm going to go out and get Norv Turner. That's where Cam needs to be like, Coach, I trust you. Norv is one of the best in the business, and I believe he's able to buy into that, then we'll see the results there in Carolina.
And the other thing that Carolina, when they were at their best, and Ron Rivera, he doesn't like the nickname, but the Riverboat Ron nickname, there's a reason. In 2015, bet more so than any year, really any team I've seen in modern NFL, certainly any year for the Panthers, they recognized that we do not have three downs to get a first down. We've got four. And when we have arguably the best short yardage back in the league, and he's our quarterback, we have to take advantage of that. And what people, I think, fail to recognize the advantage that was gained that year was, if they had third and inches or third and less than a yard, they knew we're going for it on fourth. So we can take a deep shot to Ted Ginn on third and short when the defense isn't necessarily expecting it, because it's not a punt if it's an incompletion. I don't know where Norv Turner's philosophy on that is, but I do know this. They've got a weapon no other team in the league has, which is Cam Newton in short yardage. He's shown the ability. He's never got hurt on one of those short yardage plays. He has as high of a success rate as anyone other than Brady, who was for like a decade, he was undefeated on quarterback sneaks. He's great at it. And that gives you an edge that no other team can duplicate. And that's where they've got to try to exacerbate their edge, because they don't have great running backs. Christian McCaffrey is an interesting weapon. C.J. Anderson, anyone could have had. They've got to take advantage of
that. But one of the biggest problems is one of the things you alluded to earlier is on one of those fourth downs, which you're not in fourth down that much, so to me it's not a huge advantage as you would think that you would have. But if you lose one of them, what's Cam's body language going to be? What kind of message are you going to send to the defense? So, yeah, Cam is a dynamic leader. He is a dynamic offensive player. But Cam has to be able to play successfully from in the pocket for him to be able to reach his potential, coach.
And it's hard with players that respond so dramatically to whatever's happening in the game, because
just so many bad things happen.
So many bad things happen.
It's impossible to maintain.
I remember coaching a corner that was up and down all the time. We had to try defensively to design things to get him started early in the game. And it happens with receivers a lot of times. The guys where you got to give them something positive early, but you want to move past that as a coach. And especially in the quarterback position, realize I need to have some tools in my toolbox to deal with the ups and downs of the game.
And that's one thing, because I was a very emotional player, and as I got older, I realized that there were times where you don't feel good. There are times you don't have that energy. There are times you don't have that little pep talk. So it's like a lot of times where I come on the show and Jenna's like, Chris, what's going on today? I was like, no, I'm just focused. It's one of those days I don't have a whole bunch of pep, but I got to be able to grind it out. And that's, you don't see that with Cam.
With
like all the other quarterbacks, when they get in that little rut, they're able to grind it out, able to get a first down, able to win early. And that's something Cam's going to have to learn.
There's two high-level quarterbacks in this league that show their negative emotions on their sleeve: Cam and Phillip Rivers. Phillip Rivers, we see it when he seems to almost be like throwing a tantrum on the field. Cam doesn't do that. But Cam seems to like just be beside himself at the sidelines at times, has the towel over his head. He seems morose. Like, and you can't convince me that doesn't impact his teammates. If we know that a wide receiver or a corner's emotions can impact some of his teammates, the best player on your team and the quarterback doing it absolutely can. Now, sometimes that energy is infectious in a positive way, gives them confidence that they wouldn't otherwise have. But that is a part where Cam, as he's one of my favorite players to watch, but it's a fair criticism that he's old enough. He's too old for that, to be pouting on the sidelines. Like, he's got to get better at that.
And those things do affect everybody around you. And one of the great things about Tom is you go into the fourth quarter, and regardless of what the situation is, you know that you have a chance. And you know that in his heart of hearts, he believes that he's going to find a way to win the game. And that's through tons of adversity. So when you're going like this on the sidelines with a player who's leading your team, it affects the group and affects them dramatically.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.